The Holy Gospel for this day is recorded in Mark, the 9th chapter. Jesus sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." John said to him, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us." But Jesus said, "Do not stop him, for no one who does a deed of power in my name will be able soon afterwards to speak evil of me. Whoever is not against us is for us. For truly I tell you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you bear the name of Christ will by no means lose the reward." The Gospel of our Lord. Please be seated. So, who here wants to be blessed? It's not a trick question. Some of you are a little shy about it, but I think we all do. Because radical hospitality, let me tell you this, is really about being blessed. We're going to get back to that in a bit. But let's do a quick word association. What comes to your mind when you hear the word radical? Pardon? Pardon? I still didn't hear. I'm hearing words, but I'm...
Extreme.
What else? What else? Okay. All right. Good. So we think about things like that, and we think of maybe people like when I was in the 60s, well, the hippie era, and we think of those radicals or people who are blowing things up in those days, whatever. But what we want to know is that the word radical comes from the Latin word, and you know what the word for radical is? From the roots. Radical. Roots. So really what we're doing when we talk about radical hospitality, to be truly radical, we go back to the roots of what it means to be hospitable Christians, welcoming. I got to thinking about experiences I've had with church folks over the years with practicing hospitality. Back in Avoca, Iowa, this is what a lot of our houses look like at, we joked about communion for lunch bunches. All of our homebound people would ask us to come and visit. In those days, we had 80 of them at Trinity Lutheran Church in Avoca, and the pastors did all those visits every month. We didn't have pastoral care visitation teams like we've got at Lord of Life now. So at each place you went, after you had communion, they'd say, "Well, let's have a little coffee." And you know what coffee was? It was four kinds of sandwiches, Jell-O, you know, and cookies and cake and sometimes pie and coffee, you know. And some days I'd have 8 of those visits all in one day. And the only, and the only thing that saved me from just porking out was that I was the gymnastics coach at the high school that year. And so I got a chance to work out regularly. But, you know, that was hospitality. Their understanding of hospitality. Then my mind went back to Philadelphia Church last summer when some of us were there, and one of our projects was to repair the roof of Sister Teresa, 93-year-old woman who's about this tall, just a little short lady. And we got to her house to fix her roof, and all her house was a 10x10 plywood, quarter-inch plywood walls with this corrugated roof that was falling apart. And inside it was, you know, just dirt floors, 2 beds, and an extension cord and a cable wire for her television. That, and then connected a little bit to that was a place for the bathroom and a place, just a one-burner stove to cook food on. You know, that was her house. And after we got done fixing this roof, we were afraid George Eason was going to fall off the thing. It was such a rickety little house. We still are just hoping it lasts as long as she does. You know what I mean? But at the end of that, she insisted that we stay for lunch. And you know what lunch was? She had her daughter boil potatoes for us, and then she had bought cans of Coca-Cola for us. We knew she could not afford that. That was way above and beyond any money that she had, but she insisted on sharing what she had with us. Potatoes and Coca-Cola. Hospitality for her. That was pretty radical hospitality. And then I think of Minerva from a church I served in Milwaukee years ago. in Milwaukee, and she stayed awake, for instance, every year for 48 hours baking limpa rye bread, this Norwegian rye bread, 200 loaves of it for the Lutefisk and Lefse dinner that they did every year. And then she would do other things. She would host baby showers and birthday parties for families in that inner city neighborhood who really couldn't afford to do that. She would just invite them to her house. And you had to be careful when you went to Minerva's house, because if you complimented something you saw, she'd say, "Oh, here, you can have it." And so everything, so you had to just kind of keep your mouth shut after a while, realizing if you like something, she was just going to give it to you. I think that's a bit extreme, more than radical. It's, you know, but all these people I've been talking about, our brothers and sisters in Christ, have something in common with Abraham and Sarah from our first reading that Bruce read today. Remember the story? Abraham and Sarah, here they were in their 90s. They couldn't have children, between them at least. And these three men come to the door of their tent. And Abraham runs out and offers them a feast and a way to clean up on their journey, because that was the way that you were in the Semitic cultures. You're hospitable to those in your midst. Even if they're your worst enemies, when they come on your property, you treat them like royalty. And so Abraham didn't just offer him a snack. He had Sarah bake the best bread, it tells us, kill the fatted calf. They had a sumptuous feast. And as a result of being open to these strangers, what happened? Well, they find out that these three men are actually angels. Messengers, by the way. Angel means messengers. Messengers of God. And one of the angels tells them Sarah's going to get pregnant. What a funny scene. Sarah's listening at the tent and she laughs. Did you get that humor in there, you know? And he says, "Oh, what were you laughing about?" "Oh, I didn't laugh." "Yes, you did." And you know what they named their child when it was born? What? Laughter. Isaac means laughter. Yeah, pretty cool, hey? So what do the lunch for communion bunch at Trinity in Avoca, Iowa, and Sister Teresa in Lima, Peru, and Minerva in Milwaukee have in common with Abraham and Sarah? This, just this. When you open your heart and home to the stranger, blessings flow. There. You get blessed, sometimes in ways that you never imagined or expected, by being open to the stranger, by being a hospitable one. That's just the way it is. Blessings flow when you let them flow, not just to you, but through you. Got the difference there? Not to you, but through you. Blessings are meant to flow. And maybe you've heard this old saying from the Talmud, the Hebrew commentaries on the Old Testament. "Lord, make me rich enough to be generous." How do you like that one? That's what hospitality is. Knowing that you are rich enough to be generous, and that as you practice hospitality, you are being blessed. And this passage says it. "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without even knowing it." That's just what happens when we're practicing hospitality. And you know, this was always one of the chief complaints about Jesus from people. "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Well, what are some of the people that Jesus reached out to? Remember? Do you remember Zacchaeus, the wee little man that we sing about? Zacchaeus, the wee little man who's up in a tree, so he's so hungering to have a connection somehow with this Jesus that he climbs a tree so he can see him. And what does Jesus do? He goes to that grubby little tax collector who's been ripping off all the Jews in his community, taking tax money from them and extorting them. And he goes right over to that guy and he says, "Zacchaeus, coming down from that tree, I'm going to eat at your house today." And can you imagine the gasps in the crowd? What? He's going to eat with this guy who rips us off? You know? You can understand why they get upset. Or the Samaritan woman at the well. Remember her. A rabbi was not supposed to talk to women in public, much less a Samaritan woman, an outsider. And besides that, a woman of such bad reputation that she had to go to the well at noon when no other women were there because they didn't want to have anything to do with her. He talks to that woman and welcomes her into the kingdom of heaven, right? So really then, when we're talking, though, about radical hospitality, we're not just making sure we have greeters at the front door, which is important here at church, and ushers, and that when we share the peace, we talk to each other. We're talking about a life pattern, see, in which you get blessed because the blessings flow. They're meant to flow. This is a house on 36th Street, the 2200 block of 36th Street in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it was a home of a member of that church, of Reformation Church. If you could see it, it would be just behind there, big old church. And we'll call her Sue. She was a probation officer in the Milwaukee County. She'd been through a lot of tough things in her life. Alcohol and drug addiction herself. She was almost murdered by her ex-husband who threw her down the stairs and tried to choke her. But she was tough as nails, I'll tell you. She could swear with the best of the truck drivers. I mean, she was tough. But this church, in listening to its neighborhood, had discovered a great need for halfway houses to house women addicts, women who had grown up in that neighborhood who couldn't have their children back because they didn't have anywhere to be. And they needed to learn some basic life skills, like staying sober, like getting jobs and keeping jobs, like cooking, cleaning, organizing their lives so they could eventually get their kids back, right? And when there seemed to be no way to afford a facility like that, Sue, being a recovering alcoholic herself and a Christian, she understood these words, "There but for the grace of God go I." You hear those a lot around 12-step groups. "There but for the grace of God go I." She offered her house as a location for this halfway house. And then, as in the midst of that, she ended up somehow becoming the house mother for this house. And so here she was teaching these women how to clean up after themselves, how to follow the schedule to cook, and getting them into job training. The church did do job training for these women. But she had to make sure they got up and got to work on time before she got to work. And I heard about it from her quite a bit over the years that she was doing this thing. And it was so funny because she had one mother named Angel who was living with her, and she said she's the biggest pain in the blank that she'd ever worked with, you know, and she'd joke about how this passage from Hebrews about, you know, welcoming strangers and entertaining angel unawares, you know, kind of thing, you know, because this was a real angel to her. Anyway, as often happens with inner city ministries and programs, the funding ran out and the church could no longer afford to support this ministry. And so Sue kept it going on her own, out of her own paycheck and out of food contributions from the members of the church. But finally, at a certain point, she had such serious back problems from that fall down the stairs years before. She had to go on disability, and she could not keep this house going. It was killing her. And she came to talk to me about it, and she was in such despair that day, and trying to make a decision about what to do. And she was just in pain, just absolute pain and agony about it. And I said something like, "So, in the middle of this, do you feel like sometimes like God has abandoned you? You thought you were called to do this and now you're not?" And she looked back at me with a sharp look in her eyes. She said, "I never think that." She says, "God has never abandoned me, ever." And she went on to tell how the pastor of that same church right there behind this house where she grew up in that church, when she was growing up, she was adopted by a couple who really were very abusive and mean to her. She was also a challenging kid. You know, she was a tough kid to raise, I guess. But the pastor, through her whole growing up time, was always behind the scenes, kind of watching out for her. One time, about age 7, her adoptive parents were just fed up with her, and they packed all her stuff in the car and her, and they said, "We're taking you back to Lutheran Social Services, and we're giving you back." And they actually tried. They thought they could do that, you know, and the pastor got called. He came over to that meeting and explained to them, "No, this is your child. You know, you can raise her, and the church will help you," and all that, and calm them down. And time and again, this woman saw the pastor stepping in to support and help her parents kind of become more reasonable. Well, she got to her confirmation time in her life. She'd gone through the 2 years of confirmation, and she'd memorized the whole Luther's Catechism, and she'd memorized all the Bible verses. She went into her interview with the pastor that all the kids do. We do it here, too. And she was scared to death. She said, shaken in her boots, because she didn't know that she really believed this stuff. And she was scared to death she was going to get kicked out of there. So she went into the pastor, and he asked her all the questions. She rattled off the Ten Commandments and their meetings, all that. And then he asked her, "So, do you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior?" And she was very quiet, and she said, "Pastor, I don't think I can say that. I just don't know that I can believe that." Fully expecting to be told, "Get out of here then." And instead he said, "Well, you'll grow in grace. What size robe do you want?" And she said, "Since that moment, never once have I questioned the grace of God in my life." And just think what it led to in her own hospitality. Because one pastor, this one person, was hospitable to her, welcomed her, made her feel welcome, where she felt like she didn't have a home anywhere but in the church. What a radical difference that made in many people's lives. And like Abraham and Sarah, she told me, you know, the last time I talked to her before we left Milwaukee, she says, "I've never regretted turning my house over to the halfway ministry." And she'll tell you proudly that half of those women that she had in her house ended up getting on their feet, including Angel, who, this is interesting, ultimately, she got herself through school and became a probation officer. So Sue understood hospitality as a way of life because she learned it in the church. So how about us? What does it mean for us to practice radical hospitality? Are you feeling called to turn your house into a halfway house? Well, I'm not right now. That's not what I'm called to. But how are you being called to practice hospitality? Remember the story? Remember that practicing it as a life pattern. Maybe you're being called to get engaged in Habitat for Humanity or Montgomery County Homeless Ministries, or maybe you're just feeling called to make a phone call to someone you've heard about we're going to pray for this morning to see how they're doing. How are you going to practice hospitality? How are you called? You have to figure that out for you. But as you do, just think about the impact of that pastor on that teenage girl, who to this day will tell you, "Never once have I doubted the grace of God. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name, remember, welcomes me." Then we have this passage, "Welcome one another, therefore, just as Christ has welcomed you." It's from Romans 15, and interestingly enough, it's the same theme picked by the Capital Campaign Steering Committee, that we're called to be a welcoming place, not just the pastors and the greeters and the ushers, certainly there, but all of us, because you're all a members of the priesthood of all believers, right? It's all of us our jobs to practice welcoming people when they come in the doors here at Lord of Life. And you know, this is a pretty safe place to practice, isn't it? Pretty low-risk environment. So this is practice. Everything we do around here is practice, just like worship is practice for life, you know? So here's a little thing that we've talked about before. When you see somebody you don't know during the sharing of the peace, ask them their name, even if you have to ask them 20 times. And you think in yourself, I should know their name, so I'm not going to talk to them. Maybe they've been members for 30 years, and they're going to be insulted, right? That's what I hear from people sometimes. No, if someone's important enough that you're asking them their name 20 times to try and get it down, that tells you them they're pretty important, don't you think? That's welcoming. Or saying, you know, "Why don't you come and join me for a cup of coffee or a donut in the fellowship hall?" You know, something like that after worship. And even if they don't have time today, the invitation, if you offer it genuinely, in the spirit of Christ, welcome, does make people feel welcome. So you want to be blessed? Remember, blessing is a flow. I am blessed. You are blessed often in ways you never imagine whenever you are hospitable to the stranger. Because in so doing, you may be entertaining angels without even knowing it.